Carrie Hasha from PocketYourDollars.com. You're listening to Steve Stewart on the Money Plan SOS podcast, helping everyday Americans to pay attention, not interest.
Episode 168 of the Money Plan SOS podcast. Welcome back, Debt Freedom Fighters. I am Steve Stewart, your humble servant, personal finance architect who hates your debt more than you. In fact, I talked to a couple people this week who had debt and really didn't even care that much about it. It's amazing how people just accept debt as a way of life and they don't realize what a big deal it can be in their life. I hate to wake them up. I hate to throw the cold water in the face, but sometimes, you know, you just have to wake them up to the reality that this is debt and it's stealing from your life. But you know what? We'll leave that as a discussion for another day. Today, I've got an interview with John Pagliano from WealthSteading.com. We'll talk for a couple of minutes about how you can get a quick start on your money plan in this month, which if you're listening to this before the end of October 2014, it's a three-check month. We'll have a short testimonial from a listener and a new segment of Hala from the Impala to bring us to a close. Now, before I begin this interview with John Pagliano, I need to let you know, he generally advises people and teaches people how to invest in single stocks. I do not recommend that. I will not tell you that it's dumb. I will just tell you that it takes a bit of time. It actually takes a lot of time and a lot of studying to be able to do it properly. At least that's from my own experience. I have more important things to do than to try and dig into, you know, earnings ratios and betas and stuff like that. If it's something that you're interested in, you might want to check out his podcast. But I am bringing him on to talk about his personal experiences with money, and hopefully you'll get to take something home with you, something you can learn, maybe something you can apply to your life as well, or just encourage you to keep going the way you're going now. So go ahead, sit back, relax, and learn. Ladies and gentlemen, today I'm bringing on with me John Pagliano. He's the host of Wealth Steading podcast at WealthSteading.com. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm really glad to have you on. We're going to talk about a couple things today. Primarily, I want to talk about something that you shared with me, and you summarized it really well in this one sentence. You said that small, conscious spending decisions that we make on a daily basis can change the course of our lives. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and what caused you to say that really great, powerful sentence?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, I did cheat a little bit because I had fantastic parents and grandparents that taught me that. And I was fortunate. I listen to you. I listen to Dave Ramsey, and I love hearing the message that you guys say. But again, I was fortunate enough to be raised with that, so I didn't have to hear it on a radio show. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had really good parents and grandparents that were diligent savers. Traditional things of grandparents, you know, the Depression. One of my grandparents were older, so they went through both World War I and World War II. And the kind of people that had a garden, they just never bought more than they could afford. One grandfather was a coal miner, and he never used credit at the company store kind of thing. You know, he just, if he couldn't afford to buy it, they just didn't buy it. But later, I'm 53 years old, so once I got to be in my early 40s and beyond, I started making a pretty decent income. But up to that point, I really hadn't made much more than the average person. I'm kind of from a blue-collar background, but I spent 7 years in the military, got an education, a couple degrees after that, and went into corporate America, worked there for about 20 years. And as I say, as I got into my late 30s, 40s, that's when I started making decent money. But still, I always kind of consider myself just middle-class, kind of blue-collar origin, even though I was kind of working in the white-collar world. I noticed that by having those conscious decisions to watch what we spend as a family, we were able to make fantastic lifestyle decisions, such as having a large family. We have 6 children. My wife, she was a stay-at-home mom all those years. And I pretty much have worked my career now where I stay at home too. And she said, of course, now that all the kids are raised, it's time for me to stay at home. So we were able to make those kind of things. And we did it by focusing. You have to focus on the big things, obviously. Your home and your car, your transportation. Those are like the two biggest purchases that most Americans are going to make. And if you manage that properly, and then it's just those day-to-day conscious decisions. How many $3 or $4 are you spending at Starbucks every day?
That's funny you pointed that out, because that was one of the questions I want to make sure we dug into. Is I wanted to see if you subscribe to the latte factor. That's David Bach's tagline, that
every time you go to Starbucks, you're spending $3 to $5. And if you just stop doing that, you could become a millionaire in 40 years.
Yeah, I had not heard that line of reasoning, but absolutely, I believe that for sure. And you know, it's easy for me to pick on Starbucks actually because I don't drink coffee, so I'm sure I have some other, you know, little sin in there that I should waste my money on.
I do,
but you know, but that's the thing, right? I mean, I love fast food. I could stop in at every Big Mac and Whopper and you know, do that all day long. Mm-hmm. But it's those little decisions, and if, you know, kind of speaking of that, the fast food or the lunch money kind of thing. I'll tell you, for a good bit of my career, probably most of my career, when I wasn't on a corporate expense account, because I was in sales, I traveled globally as well as you know, throughout the U.S. So I had an expense account. I took a lot of people to lunch, but I was never above bringing my lunch to work. Many years, I brown bagged it, and you don't see a lot of white collar workers doing that. But you know, I more or less retired at 50, you know, so you don't see a lot of corporate guys doing that either. And again, those are the differences. If you're spending, I don't know what lunch costs nowadays, $8, $9, $10, $15, $20 a day on going out to lunch to hang out with the guys or the girls, that's that much more money that isn't going into your 401k plan.
Yeah. Well, John, let's go back, because let's see, you were in corporate sales for a couple of decades.
Yes.
And in the past couple of years, you are now, what are you, CPA, CFP, what are you?
I have a Series 65 license, but I don't have any designations.
So you work one-on-one with individuals who have $250,000 or more net worth that they can invest in the market and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was going to say with a no designation, I kind of went through the school of hard knocks. I got out of the Marine Corps. I went to Penn State. While I was in Penn State, I was very interested in the stock market, and I had a few thousand dollars, and I started trading in, you know, when I was in my early 20s. And so I've been investing for about the last 30 years. And I've taken that knowledge where I've built up my own wealth. And frankly, I wasn't going to do it. I was going to just, you know, have a small franchise or small company or something. And I was looking for what that was going to be. And my wife had said to me, well, you know, you've been investing money for 30 years. Why don't you invest other people's money? And so that a few years ago, I went down that path, and I actually didn't realize that you could do it without being a certified financial planner or, you know, having a Series 7 license, all these things. And I didn't want to sell people stocks. I didn't want to be a stockbroker or anything like that. I personally never used a stockbroker. I always went through discount brokers all my life. So I formed my own company a couple years ago. I generally work with people like myself, kind of the millionaire next door type person, that tend to be small business owners, many of them engineers. I love working with engineers. Engineers are disproportionately millionaires, and a lot of people don't know that. They think the doctors and the lawyers have all the money, but engineers actually do quite well because they're doing what we talk about. They make those conscious decisions. They don't spend a lot of money. They make a decent income. They make above average salary, and they generally don't spend it.
Well, I wanted to lead into a discussion of, you know, you and I have come from a complete different generation than the millennials that are listening to my show. And, you know, you were talking about how you grew up with great parents and the wife was able to stay home with the kids. I believe a lot of the millennials, a lot of my millennial listeners, they don't see that that's possible anymore. And I want to get from your aspect, from your experience, what you see going on now. I mean, do you see it possible to still live in a world where you can just brown bag it, where you can have one of the two parents staying at home with the kids and still make it in this world?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. It's no different. And I can tell you, I know, I'll just rattle off the top of my head here. These are not clients of mine, but just people I've met. I know there's a woman that's about, I don't know, 26, 27-ish, college educated, but not really a great job. She's kind of in that, not really a teacher, but in that teaching educational environment, probably makes below average for a college educated person. But although she's in her mid 20s, she has, you know, like an $80,000 net worth, most of that in cash.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And very much. A young lady, not married yet. I know another married couple that I talked to just a couple weeks ago, both college educated. Neither one, again, making a substantially above average income. Their combined family income is probably about, I don't know, 55, 60,000. But for two college educated people, that's really not what I would call substantially above average. And they had something like 120,000 saved up, just an unbelievable amount. Mm. The single people that I know are renting with roommates. So they have, you know, one or two other kids that they're renting with. Some of them have stayed in their college town, so they really haven't. So they're still kind of in that college environment, but they're working. They have corporate jobs. Some of them are starting small businesses, but they're driving used cars, which I'm a big proponent of. I've only ever had one car payment in my life. I'm 53 years old. I've owned a lot of used cars. I've owned a few new cars, a lot of used cars, and only have ever had one car payment. And again, that comes back to those simple little decisions of, do you want to? I had mentioned that to the before, Steve. Maybe we should talk about this real quick. I wanted a Suburban so bad. This is going back many years ago. I held off getting a minivan to that point. I was like, I don't want to get a minivan. They're not cool. You know, I just want to get a big, if I'm going to have a big family, I want a big Suburban. And I looked at the price, and the price of a Suburban in those days, this is like the mid 90s. It was probably 60, 70% of what I was making, my yearly pay, you know, for that car. And, I made the decision not to do it. And I was going to, so I said, okay, I got to get a minivan, but I didn't have enough cash to buy it new. As I say, I've always paid cash for my cars. So I bought an old, used, ugly blue station wagon with the fake wood paneling on the side of it. You know, those things.
Those are fun.
Oh, it was hideous. It was hideous. But I'll tell you, that decision, and that was in the early 90s, but that decision really helped me to stay financially stable. I mean, that was, I had never really been a big spender anyways, but you have those urges, right? You want to, at some point you get your money and say, well, I'm going to buy an extra big house, or I'm going to buy that extra big car. And if you restrain that, particularly when you're still in your 20s and 30s, then you can have a much better lifestyle when you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s. So I resisted buying that Suburban. I kept that ugly blue car. And I used to park it, you know, way at the other end of the parking lot and walk away from it so no one would see me coming out of it because I hated it so bad. But again, that decision, you know, that decision and brown bagging it, things like that, not taking huge family vacations, those were the little decisions that allow us to live the lifestyle we live now, as well as, again, my wife. You know, I said once she had her first child, I could never get her to work again. Obviously, that's a joke. If she's listening,
yeah, I was going to say you better take that back. She works every day.
She worked harder than I ever worked. we were able to have a large family that, you know, having relying on her salary was never an option, right? It was never an issue. We never had to worry about it. So it was just one of those things that we said, well, we can't buy that big of a house because we know we only have one income. That also worked to our advantage, though, as I did move up the corporate ladder. A lot of times you have to move. You know, you take a promotion, you have to move to a bigger city, or you move to another company. And again, by my wife not working, though, we never had to worry about, well, how do we replace her income or whatever, because she didn't have one. So that allowed me to be more flexible with my income, you know, with my career field, by her being a stay-at-home mom. And because I was always out traveling a lot too, we had a very secure home. I knew that she was always there to take care of the kids, so I could focus on my career. She could take the kids to the doctors or school or, you know, whatever they had to do it. It just, I think it's a really good thing for someone to be there with the kids. Doesn't have to be the mom, but someone should be a stay-at-home. And if you can work your own business and both of you can stay at home, that's even better.
Yeah. I'm experiencing now where my wife is actually able to work out of the house. It's an amazing, I don't know, I don't want to say coincidence. It's always God's intervention coming in here, but she got this fantastic job and she's able to be home every day, you know, whether my daughter's in school or not. It's just fantastic. I want to go back to what we're talking just a little bit ago about, you know, these conscious decisions that you make. And do you feel that you are really depriving yourself? And I think this is a softball question, but, you know, there are things that I look back on that we didn't spend money on here because we were going to wait and pay cash for it. Have you had any of those experiences yourself where you feel like, gosh, it really would have been great to fill in the blank, and I kind of regret not doing it, although you're pretty secure in your decision now?
Yeah, I don't miss anything. Now, my kids may have a different answer for you, but no, I don't. We certainly, we've always lived an above average, you know, what I felt anyways was a above average lifestyle. The kids never went without anything. But we just didn't waste money. You know, again, we had a lot of kids. We weren't opposed to, we were fortunate to have three boys, three girls. So there was a lot of shared clothes, a lot of hand-me-downs. My one middle son, I always tease him. He loves to wear the brands. He always had to have a Nike swoosh and stuff like that. And, he hated wearing hand-me-downs from his older brother. Mm-hmm. But, I think those were, it's about consuming. If you want to build wealth, I tell people that the only way you're going to build wealth is it's how much you earn, you know, and it's simple, right? It's a simple equation. If it wasn't simple, I couldn't have built wealth because there's nothing complicated about anything I do. You have to earn and you have to save, and then you have to develop investment income. Those are just three simple things you have to do. And I tell people you have to do them in order. You can't be an investor before you're a saver. You can't save before you're earning. And so if people just focus on those things, and many people have the earning equations down well, you know, particularly professionals. Again, I meet a lot of particularly doctors that make a lot of money, but they just don't have a net worth. They never learned the saving part of that equation. And they all want to invest. You know, they want to come to me and say, well, hey, can you invest my money? And I look at what they have and I say, you know, you may be making $400,000, but you know, you're living paycheck to paycheck. You can't be an investor because you never were a saver. You have to start saving. And again, it comes back to those simple little decisions about, I know Dave Ramsey's really big proponent of using cash. And I have the discipline where I don't do that. I use a credit card just because I'm lazy. I have a credit card. I just swipe it and then I pay it off at the end of the month. And I know what I have. But for people that don't have that discipline, the cash in your wallet is fantastic, because you look in there and you see, gee, I'm down to my last $10, $20, $30, whatever it is, and maybe you'll curb your spending.
That would be a default to the small conscious spending decisions that we're talking about here.
yeah, exactly. Most of us earn our income by time we put in at work. And if you start factoring in how much is that lunch costing me? How much is that car costing me? How much is that vacation costing me? And, you know, an actual hour's worked and that's your life. You know, see, so I spent 8 months of my life to go on one vacation for like 5 days, and I was rushed, and I had to get on a plane. And you know, you just sit back and say, maybe you should have just gone camping with your family. Just a simple little, buy a little tent, get some sleeping bags, you know, go stay at a state park or something. I did something like that just recently here. I mean, the last week I was in, I live in Utah. I was in southern Utah last week. Beautiful weather. I was down there on business, but my kids were off school, so I took them down there. We tent camped. I got a big canvas tent. I just have a couple kids left at home now. We camped out. The stars were beautiful. I mean, you couldn't have paid for that kind of beauty. We're in the mountains, the big black sky at night with beautiful stars. It was a state campground. It cost like $16 a night. It was dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are some of the experiences that you can't put a price on.
No, they're fantastic. You know, Hawaii would have been better, I admit, but you know, Hawaii wouldn't have been $16 a night.
Well, for the millennial who's listening to this and thinking, well, I want to become a millionaire before I'm 50, but I don't want to completely deprive myself. You know, what are some of the things that you're seeing that are working for those younger people out there that you could see that would help them get to that goal?
Yeah, Steve, it's really a matter of, again, we talked about, they have to have earnings. So they definitely have to put themselves in a position where we're earning a decent income. But it comes down to those conscious decisions on small spending every day. And things that people don't necessarily think about. They may think, well, hey, I am skimping. I don't have a credit card. I'm not putting anything on debt. But you see all the people walking around with the latest iPhone 6 or Samsung smartphone or whatever it is. Think about how much that is. I'll tell you, many people I know, between their smartphone, their phone bill, their cable, their Netflix, their you know, all these things they're paying for. These are abstract things that they really don't even have. It's beyond unsecured debt, because they're abstract things that they really don't even have. They're services that they're purchasing, but those are adding up to what you would have as a car payment. You know, people are paying $300, $400, $500 on those type services. And that's an area that I really think the millennials can cut back on. The lady that I mentioned earlier had nearly $80,000. She had a dumb phone. She was still walking around with an AT&T dumb phone. It wasn't a smartphone. It was a dumb phone. $20 a month or whatever it was, $15 a month. I think she's still in her family plan with her parents. Those are the kind of decisions that millennials want to make. So it's not always about taking the cash out of your wallet. Look and see what kind of subscription type services you have. Try and cut back on those. You don't have to keep up with the Joneses. I guess that's the biggest thing. I would say, you know, look at your own life and say, what kind of person do I want to be? And it sounds preachy or whatever, but that's really what it comes down to. Look and see what kind of person you ultimately want to be when you're that 50-year-old millionaire, when you're that 50-year-old millionaire next door. Do you want to have a family life? Do you want to have children? Do you want to have a certain lifestyle? Do you want to be an artist? You know, whatever it is you want to be, plan for that now and say, is that $3 Starbucks or Big Mac or whatever you put that money down for, is that worth it today, or would I rather save that and invest it and have a better life when I'm 50. And if they do that, they'll have a good journey on the way. It's not going to be misery on the way to 50. They'll have a good life as well, because they'll be focusing on the things that really matter.
Did you have anything that helped keep you focused on those small decisions? Is there a trigger or a mechanism, or, you know, was it always in the back of your mind that, hey, if I do this, then I won't be able to do that?
Well, you know, Steve, I mentioned I have six kids, so I did have one great advantage. I had six kids to feed. You know, that was a great motivator. I think big families, I'm a proponent of big families, because they do cause you to focus and think about the things that really matter. I always, my kid with my wife, I say, we never got a divorce because neither one of us wanted custody of the kids. But yeah, you have to have some kind of a goal, right? To me, freedom is very important. And in my wealth setting podcast, I talk about, you know, I say money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. And to me, that was really important. I never really wanted to live in the huge mansion house or drive a Jaguar or BMW or whatever. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be able to do what I wanted to do. And even if that was nothing, right? I mean, even if it was just a simple go fly fishing or something, that's what I wanted to do. Being able to make my own decisions and have my own lifestyle was very important to me. So that was that goal, just taking care of my family and then putting myself in a position where I didn't have to have a boss. I didn't have to compromise my integrity or do something that I didn't want to do. And then again, that was me. That was important to me. Other people are going to have other things. But whatever it is, whatever their goal in life is, that's what they should focus on and look at that. This dollar or $3 or $100 that I'm spending, is that working me towards my goal, my long-term goal? You know, because I don't think people should think of it in terms of finance. I don't think it should be dollars and cents. I think it should be more of the lifestyle. You know, do I ultimately want to spend my time, you know, whatever, painting pictures or being a musician or something. Well, how are they going to get there? They're only going to get there through money. So they have to have the dollars and cents, but don't focus on the dollars and cents.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on the Money Plan SOS podcast, and tell people exactly where they can get a hold of you if they want to connect with you.
Yeah, best place is just the Wealth Setting podcast. So wealthsetting.com is my website. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, just as Wealth Setting. That's one word, Wealth Setting, like homesteading. The contact form's on there. They can get in touch with me there. They can find out how to get to my investment firm from there as well if they're interested in that. But love to have people listen into the show and get some tips.
All right, John Pugliano, wealthsteading.com. Thanks for coming on the show.
Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Many people who are just realizing that they've got a debt problem, they get discouraged. They don't know how to get started. You know, there never seems to be enough money at the end of the month to get started on a money plan. You know, I recommend that you get caught up on all your bills so you have at least the minimums. You're never late on anything, but you have at least the minimums covered. Then you start to save up a baby emergency fund. Keep your minimums current, save up $1,000 in a baby emergency fund. Once you have that emergency fund, you've got a solid foundation on which to start your money plan on getting out of debt. And that's where we start to pay off our smallest debt. Or if you choose to do the debt avalanche and go for your largest interest rate debt, you choose what you want to do there. But you need to pay your debts. Your consumer debts need to go before you start investing for retirement, before you start saving for kids' college, before you start doing anything other than getting out of debt. And it's because you get frustrated that you don't even start. Well, October 2014 may be the month for you to begin. It may be the month, and especially if you get paid biweekly. Yeah, if you get paid every other week on Fridays, then October 2014 may be the month for you. Now, maybe you aren't paid on these exact dates, but listen to this. If you're paid every 2 weeks, there's 2 months out of the year where you get three paychecks. For instance, in October 2014, if you're paid on Friday the 3rd, you'll also get a check on Friday the 17th and then Friday the 31st. That's three paydays. What do you do with that third paycheck? A lot of people say, well, it's already spent before I get it. Well, remember, you're getting a third paycheck. If your paychecks are $2,000, you normally get $4,000 a month. Now you're getting six. That's a 50% increase. What are you going to do with that money? You have to be purposeful with that money. This might be the chance for you to get caught up. This might be the chance for you to put $1,000 or even a $500 chunk of money in the bank for emergencies. Get that started. And if you do that, you've got yourself a little bit of encouragement. You can see progress. You're making headway on your money plan. So take a look at your calendar. Circle the dates on the days that you are going to be paid. Take a look and see, is this a three-check month? Because the three-check months are great for getting ahead. They're great for hitting some of your savings goals. They're great for starting to accomplish those things that you need to do, like, you know, knocking off another debt or two, maybe getting some new tires put on the car. You don't want, you know, maybe you haven't saved up enough money, but you know those tires are starting to go. Well, this might be the month to put a chunk of change aside so you can get those new tires. What if you don't get paid on those three Fridays that I was talking about, the 3rd, the 17th, and the 31st of October 2014? Well, guess what? January of 2015 is the next three paycheck month. Again, this is if you're paid biweekly on Fridays. Not everybody gets paid that way. You know, October 2014, there's actually five Wednesdays. Maybe you get paid on Wednesday, and so you get paid on the 1st, 15th, and 29th. But the next three Friday month, where you pay, you know, if you're paid bi-weekly, I know that's confusing. If you get paid every other week on Friday, January might be your next one, January 2015. There's January 2nd, January 16th, and January 30th. Check that out. So have a plan. You know, if you use You Need a Budget, this is really easy because all you have to do is forecast what you're going to spend your money on, which of course is something we recommend you do anyway. Once you get a paycheck, you earmark that for either consuming to be spent this month or next month. Well, if you've got all your expenses already covered for this month and you earmark it for next month, by the end of November, you're going to see that money sitting in that account. And you're going to go, hey, we've got the extra money to throw to debt, or we've got the extra money to, you know, save for an emergency, or we've got, you know, we've got some money to do this and actually pay for a couple hundred dollars worth of Christmas gifts or Christmas party stuff, whatever. But you got to have that plan. So a call to action for you this week is to go to your calendar, circle the date you get paid, take a look and see, okay, when do I get paid this month? And when I get paid, where is that money going to go to? Forecast your spending by using a budget. And I recommend You Need a Budget. And if you want to save 10% on a purchase of You Need a Budget, which is the software package my wife uses, then go to moneyplansos.com/YNAB. That's the letters YNAB, which is short for You Need a Budget, because everybody needs a budget. You need a budget. I need a budget. We all need a budget. MoneyPlanSOS.com/YNAB to save 10% on your purchase. That's just one way you could do it. You could use an Excel spreadsheet. You could use other online software packages. Anything you want to do, but please forecast your spending. Keep an eye on how much you've spent during the month so you don't overspend that category. Stick within that amount in your category. If something comes up, talk about it with your spouse and then make adjustments where you think you can. But if you overspend groceries on $50, you got to take $50 away from somewhere else. Maybe that's clothing. Maybe that's dining out. Maybe that's entertainment. It's not going to be the electric bill. You have to be wise with this, but be realistic as well. So forecast your upcoming paydays to see when you're getting paid. What month is a three-check month for you? If you get paid biweekly, that's how it works. And you'll be amazed at how far you can get in your money plan. Before we get into a new segment of Holla from the Impala, I want to share with you a testimonial that came from a listener. We'll call him George. George says, "Hi, Steve. Wanted to write to you a note telling you how much I appreciate your show. I'm a debt freedom fighter in the middle of the battle with aspirations of retiring in 12 years or so. Outside of a $70,000 mortgage, I'm currently battling a balance of $7,200 on credit cards and $6,900 in medical bills. Check this out. I've been throwing roughly $2,500 a month onto these to get them paid off. That's a big chunk of change, dude. I picked up a nice side job that's about to pay me another $2,000 next month that he's going to toss in the credit cards as well. Isn't that cool? So by spring, I want to have them all paid off and then the fun will begin." You know, at that burn rate, it's going to sound like he's going to have no problem accomplishing that. That's amazing. He goes on to talk about how they're eventually going to start maxing out IRAs, HSAs, 401ks. I mean, really, this guy has already laid it out. It's amazing. And then check this out. He goes on to say that he can forecast conservatively that they'll have a nest egg of close to $600,000 in 10 to 12 years, starting with only $30,000 in the retirement plans currently that they've saved so far. This guy's got a plan. I love it. He goes on to say, after the debt is paid off, we plan to up our house payment to $700 a month to try and get that paid off roughly by the time they hope to retire. And then continues to say that he really loves the stand that I take on hating debt. And he says that they're on fire right now, trying to save money to throw at this debt, and they will never use credit cards again. George says he dreams the day when we can really get started with the savings side. The dude is working hard. He's working extra. He's throwing everything he can at his debts to get rid of them. He's going to hit this goal. And then he's going to move on from that debt side to the saving side and start to save for retirement. I love that he's got it all laid out. Now, we all know that things can change. Usually, when you're doing good things, things change for the better. Yes, you'll hit some rough times. You'll have a bump in the road. But when you've got money saved in an emergency fund, then that bump in the road, it's just a bump. It doesn't destroy your financial plan. And that's what I've experienced in my life, too, when we've had those big emergencies. We had blown our budget in October. You know why? We blew it. This is why. We got a $3,100 medical bill this month. Yeah. We actually did not expect it to be that big. We knew there'd be something, but it wasn't going to be that big. Of course, what happens? Insurance fell through. It wasn't as much as they said it would be. Don't get me started on insurance. This whole insurance debacle that we have in America is just crazy. I hate it. Anyway, so what do we have to do? We had to dip into our emergency fund. But we had the money saved. It didn't stop us in our tracks. We didn't go back into debt and have to start over at baby step two. We had money saved. And I'm not doing this to brag. I'm saying this is why we worked so hard. This is why we've been out of debt for 8 years. We can pay $3,100 towards a medical bill. Yes, we have to dip into our emergency fund, but it doesn't stop us in our tracks. We had a plan all along to pay off debt, start saving for our future, including emergencies in a boring savings account. And here it was, a day in October of 2014, that we had this big bill that we would have never really known was coming when we started saving for that emergency fund back in, I don't know, 2008, 2009. It's a long road. Getting out of debt is hard, and then staying out of debt is even harder. But you can do it when you've got money saved in the bank. It's that important that you've got to do it. You've got to know that someday you're going to have a $3,100 medical bill that you've got to pay. But every other month, the way we can get ahead, we're saving for retirement, we're saving for my daughter's first car, college, and wedding, in that order, please. We're putting money aside for those things. So even though I didn't have our finances laid out as detailed as George has, I love George, what he's done. I mean, he's telling me he's going to have $600,000 at retirement, you know, a dozen years down the road. That's awesome, dude. Congratulations. I love it. So just keep working towards that goal. Because if you didn't have that goal set in front of you, you're going to start looking at other things. Oh, look at that Alaskan cruise over there. Ooh, we can buy that second home. You know what? I've always wanted a yellow Camaro. Yeah, when you don't have a goal of $600,000 at retirement, that Camaro is more realistic of a goal. It really does, because I'll tell you what, those cars are sweet. But you get distracted by them, don't you? And we need to pay attention so we can keep saving for retirement. We need to pay attention so we don't pay interest on car loans. George, thanks for writing in and sharing your testimony. I just love it, and I can't wait to hear where you are. Even in 5 years, I want to hear where you are. Tell me in 2019, you know, before the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve 2019, where we tick in 2020, I want to know where you are. I want to see how far you are with your goal. That's really cool. Set an alert in your phone. I want to know. Send me an email. And if you, listener, if you want to send in a testimony and share it with the listeners here, if you're a debt freedom fighter, let's hear about it. What are you doing? How are you winning against this debt devil? How are you winning against the debt slaughter? How are you winning by saving money for your future when it came in handy when you least expected it? Send an email to steve@moneyplansos.com. And I'll read it on the air. We can anonymize your name. I can change, you know, just like I did here for George. George isn't this guy's real name. His real name is fill in the blank. I can't tell you. I told him I'd change it just because he wanted me to keep it anonymous. So I can change your name for you if you want to keep it anonymous. But we can encourage each other if you send in emails like this, and I can share them with the audience and keep everybody encouraged to stick to their money plan.
In 1.3 miles, head north on Dead Broke Street.
Here's a couple things you may not know about me. Maybe it just didn't come out in the podcast, and it's definitely not something that I would brag about. These aren't exactly wonderful traits of mine. But admittedly, I have very little willpower, especially when it comes to food. I'm lazy at times. You know, if I can find a shortcut, I'm going to take it. And you probably already know this one, but I'm really not the sharpest tool in the shed. But there's one thing that I'm not, is I ain't broke. And that's the beauty of this whole debt freedom thing, is you don't have to have a high IQ to not be broke. You don't have to have a Harvard degree to build up some assets and become rich.
You just have to live below your means. And I know it sounds easier than it is, but when you make every purchase that you make have purpose in your life, you're at the grocery store and you're saying, okay, will this purchase get me through my long-term goals? Which, you know, if you think about it, eating every day of the week for the rest of your life, the rest of your life is a long-term goal. So that is making a purposeful purchase. And when you make those purposeful purchases within your the restrictions that you put on yourself and your budget, then you should have some wiggle room there to accomplish your other financial goals. And whether that's paying off debt, building up an emergency fund, or start saving for something, you're better off than 70% of Americans who are living paycheck to paycheck. You're going to get there. You don't have to be smart to save money. There's no quiz at the bank that says, you know, give me the square root of blah, blah, blah. You don't have to know this stuff to open up a savings account at your bank. Any financial advisor will take your money and invest it. Make sure you understand what they're doing. Don't just blindly say he's a financial advisor, so apparently he knows what he's doing. Here's my money. No, you need to learn a little bit about that, but it's not that difficult. Find out what a mutual fund is. I mean, this is basic investing. If you want lower risk with a good amount of returns, mutual funds are a nice, you know, middle of the road investment for retirement or for something outside of retirement. Know what the tax implications are when you save in an IRA or a 401k versus a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k or for investing outside of retirement. I could teach you that in 5 minutes. I've done that on this episode or on the show before. I'm trying to think of what the episode number is, maybe 39 or 38, I think it was. I talked about the difference between the different IRAs and different 401k plans. It's not hard to do. You just have to pay attention. And when you pay attention to your money, you start to make better purchases. You make fewer purchases, by the way, or the purchases that you make are smaller. But you don't have to be a frugal queen to save money. Yes, that helps, but you don't have to be. You can simply live on less than you make and do something smart with a difference. And regardless of IQ or frugality level, you will start to grow net worth. And you will start to grow assets. And you will become rich. It's encouraging. Anybody can do this. Even though they don't teach you this in school, you can get a degree in personal finance by simply paying attention and not stinking interest.
I want to give a couple of quick thank yous to people who left 5-star reviews for the show on iTunes. Thank you so much, EnviroDave and Dodster01. Links to everything we talked about in the show today will be found at moneyplansos.com/168. The offer I gave at the end of episode 166 a couple weeks ago is still good. Visit moneyplansos.com/special4U. That's the number 4, the letter U, to get a special price on the virtual budget coaching course, which is 1 hour of high-definition videos, you and me walking through my signature budget process to help you pay attention so you're not paying interest. Once again, that link is moneyplansos.com/special4U, the number 4, the letter U. In the meantime, get out there, encourage others, and be debt freedom fighters. God bless you. See you next week.